You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I'm Andrew Wiebe at my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. What's up, boys? How you feeling?
Just rocking my voice now from the homie Zach Steffen and Alex Cronali. They created this company to make sure that we have a voice and it can be heard, so that we're powerful together, and it's all about unity. So repping voice now at voice now VoyceNow.
I like it, man. I like it. It's very Caitlin Carr of you. I mean, we couldn't even get into the show.
Charlie
before the
promotion.
It is.
Oh my gosh.
Entered the show with a plug.
Yeah, nothing. There was nothing personal there other than I have this sick hoodie and here's how you can get it, which I respect, man. Which I respect, you know, for the right people, for the right causes, you got to do that. We talked about Supporter Shield on the last show. We were a little bit confused. I think a lot of people are a little bit confused. The Supporter Shield Foundation tweeted on October 19th, which is now 3 days ago, quote, "The board would like to provide an update. We are currently holding meetings with supporter group representatives about the original decision. In light of new information and feedback we've received, a public update will be forthcoming. I have not yet seen that public update on the Shield, but we will look forward to that. That is an important piece of silverware, an important storyline, just an important thing in Major League Soccer. So we'll wait and see on that one. We have a big show today. 22 Under 22 is out. You know we love it. Hashtag play your kids. If Doyle was here, it would be a more
Charlie
interesting
already
debate.
Looks upset.
Huh?
Charlie already looks upset just hearing 22.
Why? Give me what's in your heart, Charlie.
There are just so many snubs on this list, or just people
snub city
put in positions that, you know, that maybe they shouldn't be in. So one guy, Anthony Fontana, who's
Recency bias.
No,
you saw him score a goal. We get it.
I've been telling these people for what, a year now? This
you
kid
have.
Is quality. He
yeah.
is quality.
You are definitely the Anthony Fontana.
Yes. I've seen trade. What he can do. He is quality. And it's just starting to develop on the field because of the confidence he's receiving from Jim Curtin. And it happens with a lot of players. The coach has to believe in you and you have to feel it. So if you can try things on the pitch, you don't feel like, oh, if this doesn't come off, I'm getting yanked and I'm not going to see the field for 5 to 10 games, right? And so I think Anthony Fontana has now taken that step where, okay, we know Brendan Aaronson is going to Salzburg. Who's gonna play in the midfield? Who's going to give this team an edge next season? I'm that guy. I'm ready to take that role. And I think you're starting to see what he can kind of transform into. And they're not the same player, but he's a player that will give them an edge. He's an attacking midfielder who can score goals. Where he needs to develop is that final ball and being able to create for others and not really relying on his dribbling skills and his tidy technical skills. But he is a quality player. And I'm telling you right now, he should be higher on this list. He should be on the list.
This is a class open from you, Charlie. Like, before we could even get into real hashtag content, you've already had two of your pet projects and you've just bludgeoned them. And
okay.
I appreciate that from you.
And,
I'm
not going to start. I'm not going
to
stop there.
Tayshaun
Buchanan should be on this list as well.
You're three for three. Yep. Can I ask you, though, Jim Curtin came out and said, don't make this a headline, but then he compared Anthony Fontana to Clint Dempsey. Like, if you're Fontana and you see that quote, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, like, okay, more pressure on me? Or are you thinking, like, hell yeah, that means Jim Curtin's got to play me more? Like, back up your words, coach? What are you...
Yeah, he's not the kid that's like, oh man, the pressure's on me. Like I can't go out there and play. He'd be like, yeah, of course, I got that skill. I have that technical ability to go out there and do step overs and try things that people are afraid to try. How many players do you know haven't really, you know, had that much time on the field? A ball pops up and they're gonna try and chip the keeper in the 6 yard box. Not too many. He's that guy.
I like that he did it with the right foot too, because it was so. If you haven't seen this goal. go check it out. Over well, Matt Turner, now. By the way.
No, twice.
But I like that little like improvisation where it's like, you think I'm probably going to try to strike across it with my left, or you think I'm just going to hold it up and maybe try to put it across the six on the ground. But no, you didn't see this little dink coming and boom. Anyway, we've praised Anthony Fontana enough so far. Like the goals. Okay. Before we get to 22 under 22, these guys would not be on the list because they're not in MLS. But five Americans in Champions League, plus, of course, Alphonso Davies, who, by the way, has lost his spot reportedly at Bayern right now, just trying to get back into form. But what did you think about Sergino Dest, 90 minutes for Barca. Christian Pulisic, 90 minutes for Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Tyler Adams subbed on half an hour in a win for RB Leipzig. By the way, Jesse Marsh also coached, who, if you haven't listened to that interview, you should go back and do that. 2-2 against Lokomotiv Moscow. They probably should have won this game, but what didn't happen for him in the end? And then MLS legend, forever remembered, always one of our own, Angelino, with the ridiculous goal. That's how you get to be world-class. You just drop the NYCFC. Oh, he had two, yeah. Just drop the NYCFC for a hot second, put 69 on your jersey, and you're on to bigger and better things.
Nowhere to go from there.
Okay, fine. No thoughts on the Champions League. I guess we'll keep it moving.
That was exciting. I mean, Messi scores in a Champions League game, celebrates with Sergino Dest. It's not really something we're used to. Would have loved to have seen Weston for Juve. Obviously not possible right now. We hope he's doing well, but it's one of those moments that's pretty cool. I wouldn't say Dest really stood out that much in that game. Didn't really need to, but it's cool because it seems like there might be a young group at Barca coming through, and he would be a central piece of that. They started young guys on the wing, in central midfield, stuff they've been trying to work on, and Dest seems to be a major part of what they hope will be the future of the club.
Charlie, what do you think this camp in November is going to be like? Looks like it's just going to be the one game against Wales. They've talked about it. These guys are like, we can't wait to be there. I can't wait to see them there. What do you think?
Well, I think for me, even if they don't have that much training time because of the COVID protocols, I just want to see the team on the field, how it looks, what it looks like, where guys are being played, what positionally, where is Weston McKennie, where is Tyler Adams, where is Gio Reyna, Christian Pulisic, seeing them all on the field together. That's what I'm really looking forward to. Where's Chris Richards? What does he look like in this group? Zach Steffen, a lot of these players who are getting a ton of minutes at the top clubs in Europe coming together and giving us that first glimpse of like, this is what we're looking forward to. This is the kind of style that they're going to play as well. You know, because I think you're playing against a Wales side that has quality of Gareth Bale, especially is on it, but Aaron Ramsey and Weston McKennie teammates at Juve going against each other in the midfield. That's appealing. That's appealing to me. And just seeing how they work together, how they communicate. And this could be kind of like the base performance for them. You know, if it goes really well, fantastic, because the expectations are going to be through the roof regardless, knowing that they're all playing Champions League. But if they're not, it's just a work in progress. So I want to just see how Greg Berhalter basically aligns them up and sees how the style of play kind of works for this group.
Feels like a mirage, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, you've been crawling along the sand and your hands have been burning for like a year plus at this point. Just, you see in the distance this like beautiful spring, just flowing water, and you just think you're going to get a drink and it just hasn't happened for us.
Yeah.
And now we're finally going to get to taste sort of the forbidden fruit. I cannot wait to see what they do and how they fit together. And also then what comes after that. This is such an uncertain time, but to have that little taste would be really, really special. All right. Before we get to Drake Hills, who's here from the Tennessean to talk about Nashville SC, who had a really big win and have a really tight stretch of games, but now feel like solidly a playoff team, let's really tear 22 under 22 apart. That's what we like to do. Hashtag play your kids. This is sort of our niche within the MLS world of rip many,
it,
I guess.
Rip it apart.
Are we going to rip it apart? We can't praise it? We can't have fun with it?
No. But we got to manipulate.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just going to be the wrecking ball.
I'm not a wrecking ball here. I'm more of like I come in, I see the vision. I see the pieces. We just have to realign them.
Got you. You're like, you're a designer here. Somebody didn't set this house up quite right, and let Charlie come in and fix it. Here is the top five. Brendan Aaronson, number one. Shocking to me. Shocking, because number two is Brian Rodriguez. He was my number one. You can explain here in a second if you voted him one, Dave. Number three, Mark McKenzie, respect it. Number four, Ayo Akinola, Toronto FC. And number five, Paxton Pomykal. And then I'll just do the top 10, just so you get it. Six, James Sin. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Paxton Pomykal at five, but he hasn't really played all that much due to injury. So is this are you saying he's five because of potential and not really performance?
It's both because he has performed in MLS, right? So you could say there are players on this list more towards the bottom who are pure potential because they haven't really played yet in MLS. Moses Nyman would be an example. Paxton Pomykal has performed in MLS and for the youth national team at a pretty high level. He just hasn't done it in 2020. This is not purely a who are you in 2020 list. So I think the Paxton vote is on potential, on what you've seen on the field, and then trying sort of to ignore that he's been hurt this year. It's not that he's played poorly. For example, Jesus Ferreira dropped down the list because he's performed poorly this season.
Yeah. So I had him at seven, Paxton Pomykal. He's at five in this list. By no means is my list any sort of like, that's not the truth here. That's where, just where my take, obviously. You can confirm that and drag me if you'd like, Dave. Number six, James Sands of NYCFC. Seven, Cole Bassett of Colorado, who's really broken out this year with some big goals. Eight, Ezekiel Barco of Atlanta United. Nine, Gianluca Busio of Sporting Kansas City. And 10 is Daryl DK of Orlando. Of course, the full list at MLSsoccer.com. And we'll talk about a lot of these other guys. Before we get into your number one, though, Dave, and it seemed pretty clear from your body language and your face that that's who you voted for, number one, Brendan Aaronson. Mm-hmm. Walk me through how you guys thought about this list this year and how you voted. What were the things going through your brain as you put this together? Because it's not easy. There's a huge list of snubs. It's hard to order them. It's hard to sort of determine, okay, am I a potential guy? Am I, what have they done, an MLS guy? Am I a Matias Pellegrini was bought for $9 million, so I got to rate him highly sort of guy? How did you think about it?
I think this was the hardest list we've ever had because there wasn't an obvious one. And I think most of the years we've done it, Miguel Almirón, Alfonso Davies, even with Tyler Adams right behind him, guys like that, it was clear who they were. So there wasn't an obvious number one. And then I think we've spent the most money on young players now in MLS, whether that's MLS signing players from overseas or Joe Scally getting bought for $1 million by a European team and has like two MLS appearances. It's harder to put guys on this list because where you go and what you're acquired for and what your status is a part of the player that you are and the perception of you. So Luis Diaz is already seen as a DP. Ignacio Aliceta is already seen as a DP. That's higher than what Moises Nyman is. And yet you have to look at their potential, the production now, which for a lot of these guys hasn't been as good as we'd expect, and then what you think the future will be. So it was really tough. I think this is the hardest I've ever had. And there were moments where I looked at it, and for example, Ayo Akinola has been fantastic. It's been 10 games of production from him, which is awesome. And I see what he can be, and I see how he does it when he gets to play at center forward. But it was hard for me to say, on top of a guy like Brian Rodriguez or Mark McKenzie, to put him higher than them. Mark McKenzie's now done it for two, almost 3 years at a high level, is probably a national team starter for the U.S., would have started in the U-20 World Cup if he was healthy. So some of those were tough for me to kind of move around. Frankie Amaya started like 30 MLS games. And it's hard to put a guy in front of him who's played seven or eight MLS games. Mm-hmm. So that was what was really tough. But that's also what's great is it used to be, here's a few guys that play and then it's pure potential.
Yeah,
this is a potential list. This is a futures list. And now it's a combination of production and potential.
I personally decided this year that I was not going to basically put potential on the same pedestal as production. I decided that because there are so many options and so many guys that are impacting their clubs at a first team level, that I was going to prioritize production, especially because we went from 24 under 24 to 22 under 22. So if you're 21 years old or younger, and you are a critical piece of your team and their success, that is more important to me right now in this list than if I think, wow, you're 16, you're signed, everybody loves you, maybe you're going to become this. Well, you're not that yet. So I wasn't able to, in my mind, vote on that. And also because, frankly, I haven't had time to watch much USL Championship. I haven't watched some of these guys that are the true potential plays, like a Moses Nyman. So I didn't put them on my list because I didn't feel that I could vote on something that I didn't know. So I wanted to make sure I knew that I'd seen them play a number of times live, that I've done it. The one thing I will say about the transfer fee side of this, because Matias Pellegrini did not make this list. Julian Carranza did not make this list.
And they shouldn't.
Ignacio Aliceta did not make this list. Yeah. My pushback on, hey, they would cost this much money would be, how much money are MLS teams putting into academies? I understand that that's not money for a specific player. Hey, you, Kevin Paredes, you're worth this much on the open market, but that is an investment to produce players. And so I kind of, I don't know, I didn't overvalue transfer fees, I guess is what I'm saying when I did this. I was all about production. I was all about what I see on the field in MLS at the first team level. And if you're doing it there, I considered you for my list. Charlie, how did you think about it? And then we'll get to some of our snubs and our agreements and all of our little things to tear apart.
Well, I love this list and I love this idea because I look at it this way. If you've performed in Major League Soccer, I look at your minutes. How much have you played? Because some guys have started games versus just coming into games, and coming into games is very difficult especially at Major League Soccer, where you're coming in as a young player and you got to catch up to the game right away and adjust and kind of find a rhythm without building from minute one to minute 90. And so when I'm looking at these players and I'm saying, oh wow, you know, this guy has played started 10 games or has come into 18 games, has only started five, I think you can find a balance of where are they really? What's their real true level and versus their potential? So finding that middle ground of what they're doing right now, how they're making an impact to what's their real ceiling. And then figuring out, okay, on this list, this is how I'm going to rank my guys, the guys who are performing right now in Major League Soccer. And then the next tier is that potential. So I think the top five on this list right now, no one's going to argue Brendan Aaronson as a one. You might say, Mark McKenzie might be one.
I would. I will do it right now if you'd like me to. That should be Brian Rodriguez. It absolutely should be Brian Rodriguez. Brian Rodriguez is a combination of production and potential. He, in my opinion, has the best mix of both.
What has he produced in Major League Soccer?
He's got like 10 assists this year.
Weeby, he has 2 goals and 7 assists. Brendan Aaronson has 4 goals and 5 assists. You did this on the last show too.
Yeah.
You said he's been so much more productive.
Yeah.
They've led to the exact same amount of goals in MLS, and Brendan Aaronson is more of a vital role than Brian Rodriguez.
He's playing with Diego Rossi and Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. Time out.
And Sergio Santos.
Wow. You're going to slander the union right now. One of the best teams in the league. You're going to act like Castro Shabilko and Sergio Santos are just pub team players that can't do jack and Brendan Aaronson's carrying the load.
Now you're taking it in a completely different direction. Okay.
How about this?
Being the 10 is harder than playing on the wing.
Who is a prolific winger in Major League Soccer, and Bradley Wright Phillips, who is arguably the greatest goal scorer in Major League Soccer.
Well, you know what helps make
Sergio Santos, who is still trying to figure out, and Kasper Shabilko, who we've seen his potential. We've seen his top ceiling.
Okay.
He's not going to get any better than he is now.
Let me continue. We're not debating the union here. We're talking about Brian Rodriguez.
Correct.
Part of what makes BWP
brings up
so special
slandering the union and then says we're not debating the union.
Well, I was just saying, don't say something about somebody.
No,
don't say something mean about somebody if you don't, want to come bring the heat on. I'm saying that part of BWP's success this year, because Rossi is more of a I'm going to get my goal sort of winger, in my opinion, is partly due to Brian Rodriguez. I think you also have to consider in this equation, not just potential, but production and belief at the international level. Like Brian Rodriguez, Uruguay, who have a very good track record of knowing who good players who will translate and do well are, have put a ton of trust in Brian Rodriguez. And he has performed at international level in Copa America, in World Cup qualifying, in big friendlies for them. He is a young player that they put a ton of faith in, who has a future in Europe. We know that. He's not sold yet, but he has that future in Europe. So you have to consider that.
Great.
And then just on potential, I just think personally in this moment, he is a more dynamic attacker in certain situations, maybe more 1v1 than it is like Brendan Aaronson's sort of collective brilliance so far, than is Brendan Aaronson. For me, it's very close, but it is Brian Rodriguez.
So you said it was clear.
Well, that is clear. It can be close and clear.
He's flip-flopping.
It can be close and clear.
Okay.
All
of that's great.
He's all over the place.
You can't tell me that BWP is the greatest forward in MLS history.
Don't argue my case. You make your case.
Oh,
tell me why Brendan Aaronson should be one.
Yeah, so one is the production's exactly the same right now in MLS. I think he's younger than Brian Rodriguez. Brian Rodriguez, the Uruguay stuff's fantastic.
Yep.
Uruguay also has a track record of only playing like 12 guys. And so they picked him before he got to MLS. It wasn't on his MLS play.
That's fine.
And then he's just in the team because that's how it works. And it's awesome. Uruguay is an incredible national team. And that's fantastic. But it's also how they've started guys in World Cup games that don't play for their club week in and week out. That's what they do. The other thing for Brendan Aaronson is his role is more responsibility. He plays in the center of the field. He has to cover ground defensively, which Brian Rodriguez does not do. He has to link up play and help change the tide of the game. Brian Rodriguez doesn't have to do any of that. He just has to get the ball, try and beat someone 1v1 and create. And while he's been good at it, he hasn't been great at it. And that's been one of the flaws for this team is when Vela's not in, he is not an elite scorer. And they don't have that thing. Brendan Aaronson, on the flip side, has moved from the side of the diamond into the 10 position from last year to this year, and the team has gotten better. So a lot of that goes on Brendan Aaronson's shoulders, and he's already been sold to a Champions League team in Europe.
But I don't disagree with that. To me, they are the top two.
I would put Mark McKenzie ahead of Brian Rodriguez in Major League Soccer. I would put Mark McKenzie, after watching him this week and seeing him through MLS's back tournament, through seeing his progress through the past season, is right now playing at the highest level a center back can play in Major League Soccer.
Do you think, and I love Mark McKenzie,
you get into a ceiling debate.
Yeah, that's the debate I was just going to try
Rodriguez,
to have with you.
I agree with Phoebe. Brian Rodriguez has the skills and the athleticism and ability to be a starter on a competitive Champions League team at an attacking position, which is fairly rare coming out of MLS. And Mark McKenzie, do you think he's a guy who's going to start on one of those teams over the next 5 years?
Yes,
I do. Then that's fair.
That's totally fair. And look, mine is Brian Rodriguez. It's Brendan Aaronson. And while I think it was clear, it was close. And then I have Mark McKenzie. So I'm right there with you. But what a blessing it is for us to be sitting here arguing about three guys in this list and say, do we think that they can play at a Champions League level? Do you think that's in their future? And we're saying, for sure it is for one. We already know that. Almost certainly it is for another in Brian Rodriguez whenever he is sold, or wherever he does go eventually. And I think that Mark McKenzie has that too. He just needs somebody in Europe to take that chance on him.
Do you guys want to dunk on me? I voted Paxton third.
Really? Let's talk about Paxton.
You see him on the... So this is someone who, and we talked about it in our 5v5 with Charlie, is I've seen a lot of these guys play as youth players. So I match up a lot of that of where were they? What level were they at? And I think in MLS as well, Paxton Pomykal, I think on the field was better than Brendan Aaronson. He has shown that he can be a better player in MLS with youth national teams, all of that.
He's hurt
right now.
Can I ask you to define that? Can I just ask you to deflect for people that are listening and are like,
I think
what's better?
I think he's more consistent. I think he sees passes better and therefore can create for his teammates better. I also think he's more versatile, which puts you in a situation where I think it's going to be easier for him to play going forward. He can play on the wings. He can play as a 10. He can play as an 8. And Aaronson can do those things as well, but I don't know that he does all of them at a high level. I think Paxton does. I look at Paxton Pomykal, and over the 5 years that I've watched him play now, 4 years, I think he's as good as anyone I've ever seen. And that includes Weston McKennie and Gio Reyna and Tyler Adams over the course of their production. I think Paxton, there's the alarm telling you it's true.
Yeah.
I think Paxton.
I thought that was false. That's what the alarm means is false. The beeping is false.
He said Gio Reyna went ding, 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 ding.
maybe not Tyler. Yeah. I'm pretty high on Tyler.
Gio Reyna? How much does. Here's my problem. Part of potential is staying healthy. Part of potential is being able to play. Part of potential is having the arc of your career come at the right times. A lot of this is it's luck.
Timing.
Like it's luck and timing. Exactly. Where your body's going
to
hold up.
We'll get to the national team conversation about that timing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like, and this is why I had, though I really like Pomykal too, I had him at 7 because I feel like his timing is thrown off. That the places that he was going, the player he was becoming, while it can still happen and may still happen, now have an asterisk on it, which is he's got to work through these injuries that he has now, and he has to also work through the feeling, the lost, maybe, and I don't know if it's time, true.
Like the lost time,
you're saying? The lost time, but as well as, is this going to be the trend for his career? Is his body able to just hold up? Or is his style of play, which is aggressive and bang-bang and 50-50 challenges and physical sometimes, is it going to hurt him long term? That's I love him as a player, but I wonder.
I think all of that's fair, and I think health is a genuine part of judging a player's potential, and I don't think it's easy. But if this is just an injury, and then he comes back, it takes 6 weeks, right? Busio played defensive midfielder for 2 weeks, and now he's going back to Europe when everyone was off him. Like, it's very quick for him to...
True.
If he's the player that I think he is, which I've seen... He's back there once he gets healthy. Now, if he never gets healthy and it's a whole thing and he's constantly working on it and I mean, we had a conversation about Stu Holden before we got on the show. That was a reality of his career, and we've seen it with a couple of national team players, John O'Brien as well. Yeah, it could never happen. But the potential and the quality of those players still exists in your mind. You still know what those players could be, and I think Paxton's at that level.
Let me ask you this question, Charlie, because I think it'd be interesting coming from you, given who you are. You have Ayo Akinola at 4, Toronto FC. He's been great this year, bagging goals. And you have Daryl DK at 10 for Orlando. And when you look at it, it seems like Daryl DK should be much older because he went to college, but that's not the case. They're very close in age. Both starters for playoff teams, both starters for teams that we consider among the best in MLS. Toronto FC may be the best, Orlando trying to push their way there. Who would you take between those two players over the next 5 years? I had Daryl DK ranked higher than it did Ayo Akinola. I had him 5 and 6. DK at 5, Akinola at 6. What do you think? Who are you taking?
Ayo Akinola.
Why?
I rated him last year. Actually, it was against the New England Revolution. He came in.
Shocked.
And he his ability to understand where he's you know most dangerous in that final 18. His ability to take the right touch to get himself an opportunity at a shot at goal, and then his finishing ability as a striker. He's got a low center of gravity. He's quick. That first 3 or 4 steps is so powerful, and he's allowed to cover so much ground in a short amount of time. And then he's got a good sense of how to finish, where different using different parts of his foot. He can combine. He has a good touch. And he's direct. I like that he's hungry. He's strong. He brings. There's a lot of intangibles that he has that you don't see often. That's why I really believe that he offers you something different. Daryl DK has adjusted to Major League Soccer, I think, in a much better way than I had anticipated. Just because I watched the ACC last year, I covered him. So watching him play every week, I thought, he doesn't lack that. I mean, he lacks that top pace, that acceleration that you're like, oh, you know, he's that's going to be the difference maker for him to have that breakaway speed when he makes those runs. But he has the good hold up play. He knows how to use his body well. He gets in behind. He can score goals. He's good in the box, good movement. But I think Ayo Akinola, when you watch his timed runs out of midfield, when you watch how he's able to read the defense and get in between the lines and he can finish with his right foot, left foot. He just has all these different elements to his game that, for me, show that his ceiling is higher than Daryl DK.
Interesting. Do you agree with that, Dave?
Because so I think Charlie's point though of what separates them is true in that DK's strength and size and ability to hold up the ball. If he becomes elite at that, that takes him to another level because he doesn't have that breakaway speed over the top. And Akinola's ability to run the back line and to get in and create chances, that's what takes him to the next level. And if either of them are able to do that at an, you know, world-class elite level, then that's what's going to take them. So I think for DK, I agree with Charlie, but I think there's the potential that he becomes, I guess for the US, it's been Josie, right? The guy who can drop in, get the ball at his feet and create for other players. Josie has better feet than DK does.
And that's the big difference.
But you see DK this week, Charlie, beat a guy 1v1, draw a penalty kick out of nothing. And that was his ability on the ball. And this is just his first year in professional soccer. So if he can add that to his game continuously, then he has that potential. But Ayo, I think, is the safer bet and probably has that higher ceiling, fits into that position better.
But the way he took the player 1v1 and dribbled to catch that PK in the box, that wasn't like a silky smooth, right? I'm on the dribble. Yeah. I can, you know, evade any defender who comes at me.
It was I can't believe this big guy is moving.
It's more like I'm taking this long touch. I'm not even going to get to it if I don't get fouled, but I'm going to get this defender to commit in the challenge and I'm going to go down. I think Ayo Akinola, when you watch his timing and his understanding, and, you know, this is a young striker who's been watching Josie Altidore all these years on the bench, getting a good understanding of how to be impactful. And Josie's, you know, a big, big striker. He's strong. He doesn't get credit for how gifted he is technically. He actually is very gifted. I love playing with him because he did have that the soft feet. He could cushion the ball down. We could play off each other. And so I watch Ayo and I'm like, he's taken a lot of parts of Josie's game and added it to his. So I think that the advantage goes to Ayo Akinola when you talk about the overall arc of their careers, that potential. And he can be one of those players that really is a game changer for the U.S. men's national team. That's why I'm like, keep developing, keep growing, keep pushing yourself. But then also choose the U.S. already. Hurry up and choose the U.S. already.
Come on, Josie. Where you at, man? Sell this. Look, I think what you all are saying is right. And maybe I wouldn't change it. You know, I did what I did. But the one thing that maybe I take away from this conversation and listening to you, Charlie, is that you're probably right that the more difficult skill to develop and be good at a high level is the instinct as far as the runs, the timing of those runs, and then the finishing. Mm-hmm. And those are all things that I think that DK needs to add sort of and refine. And maybe that's more difficult for him to add and refine than it is for Ayo Akinola to be more of a like hold up combination player.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's just not being asked to do that right now. So that's why we're not seeing it as much from Ayo. But either of these guys, great to have them in the league. We won't go through the whole list here, but I just want to get your guys' thoughts.
Can I just throw out real quick? I put a third forward on my 22, Ricardo Pepi, at like 19.
He's 22 on mine.
Yeah, I think that he has the ability to finish. I've never seen an American do that. No offense, Charlie. You are an elite striker. But Pepe has that Pipo Inzaghi style. Like, it doesn't really matter what the soccer game is. A ball's going to go in the net off his foot. And I think at such a young age, we saw flashes from him this year. But he's so, you know, for an American player, we would be 5 years away from seeing those flashes normally. Like, he's 17. And we're used to seeing guys at 21, 20, 21, 22 start to show that, like DK. So Pepe was on my list as well. Continue.
Please. Any surprises, any egregious mistakes that you see here from the voters? Anybody that you're just like, yeah, boom, pegged that one right away?
So I had Barco and Busio outside my top 10. And the Barco one, I think, is the hardest one because we say we don't want to talk about money. He's an Argentine youth national team guy, a record transfer. It's really hard to get away from people who are smarter about soccer. Their perception of him. If all these people think he's this good, you have to at some point, and you see the natural ability, the touch on the ball, all those things. If it all comes together at some point, it has to be there. But I think I put him 14th because he hasn't done it for me. And Busio, I still have question marks about the highest level and what position he plays. I see the soccer IQ from him, but is he an influential enough player to play in central midfield? I don't think he's good enough defensively. Is he creative enough? Does that not matter anymore because you're just pressing and it's a whole different game? So those two had question marks for me. And I had much higher Frankie Amaya, who I really like as a player. He wants the ball. He wants the game to go through him. He has confidence even when it's a garbage fire of a team and he's the youngest guy on the field. And he's shown versatility. He sees that last pass, but he can play hard defensively. He can cover a ton of ground. So I had him in my top 10 and I was pretty high on Cole Bassett, which you guys decided to scream about. Before we came on here,
I look at Cole Bassett.
Whoa. No one screamed. But
okay, fair.
Okay.
Weeby, where'd you have him on your list?
Yeah. I had, and you know, feel free to roast me up here. I had him 20, and I feel like probably that was too low.
I feel that way as well.
Charlie, I think that's part of this process, right? There's regret to it. And I feel like I'm a little regretful about Cole Bassett, even though I probably don't think he's top 10.
Yeah. Charlie, between 8 and 20? Where do you land?
I would say he's Cole Bassett's between 13 and 17.
Okay. So farther down than me. Yeah. I look at him and I say, I've seen him play at the 8 in MLS and I've seen him play at the 10 now. And one, for the Colorado Rapids this year, it was going in one direction. And one of the biggest changes they made was inserting Cole Bassett at the 10 and it changed for them. So he's shown his ability to affect the game in MLS. He's shown his ability to play multiple positions. When I look at him, I think he's one of the cleanest technical players coming through for Americans. I think physically he can hang. I don't think he dominates, but physically already at 19, he can hang at the professional level. And the way he sees the game, I think of it similar to what I see in Atuesta and Marc-Anthony Kay, of seeing different angles, of opening up angles, even in crowded areas in midfield and finding ability to bypass defenders, create passing angles, open up things for his team. He does all that at a high level, which I think means you don't see him with the final ball or you don't see him with the goal. And so he doesn't get that appreciation, but he has that ability to play at that level. And in talking about it with you guys before, I brought up Benny Failhaber and where he was at 19, but I think Sasha Kljestan is a better comp for him because Kljestan is one of the all-time assist leaders in MLS history and played as an 8 in Anderlecht and was a national team guy. And so I think Kljestan's his technical ability so he could play anywhere, but also his consistency was mm-hmm. at such a high level. And I see that with Cole Bassett at 19. Is Cole Bassett going to start for Bayern Munich in the Champions League? I don't know. But at this point, you can't tell me he's not going to be a 10 in MLS for the rest of his career if he wants to be. And that is something that already puts you in a list.
Yeah, for me, you know, it's consistency. It's showing, you know, the ceiling. But a guy like Cole Bassett, he's always going to be now under, but in the shadows of a Tyler Adams, a Weston McKennie, a Gio Reyna, Christian Pulisic. So when you talk about national team performers, if you get caught in a generation where no matter what you do, really, you're not going to get on the field for the national team because you're behind these guys. And I know you brought up, can they stay healthy though? But at the end of the day, you're looking at this group, and you know it's similar to I say Stu Holden, right? It's you have this quality player who just can't break into the side because you're not going to ever play over Landon Donovan, you're not ever going to play over Clint Dempsey, you're never going to play over Michael Bradley, and you're kind of like, oh, can I play in that other midfield role? And which they gave to Ricardo Clark for a number of years, right? And then Jermaine Jones came on to the side. You're never going to play over Jermaine Jones. So you can kind of get overshadowed by some of these bigger talents who aren't going to move, right? And so the development on the national team is sometimes unfair because it depends on the players that you're competing against in that position.
What a beautiful thing, though. What a beautiful thing.
Real quick, two things. One, Sasha played 50 times for the national team, and no one would ever call him a starter, right?
Right.
But there's still games, there's still opportunities, yeah. And I agree with you. I think other guys are ahead of him for sure. The flip side is, I think we all talked about how we didn't appreciate Sasha enough when he came here and dominated at Red Bulls. And Benny Failhaber was the same conversation. Great at Hamburg, struggled at Derby, then bounced around, struggled at the Revs, and then gets good at SKC. And we're like, why didn't we appreciate them earlier? Well, here's our opportunity. Now we see these guys who play pro at a time when both those guys were in college. And like you said, with Akinola, can see the game from a pro level, can learn it from the guys around them at a higher level. And then I think we're going to see guys who maybe we want everyone to start for Barcelona because Dest does it now and it's so cool. And it may not be him and that may not be Brendan Aaronson and whoever else, but there's quality there. And I think in MLS now, with more money, with the ability to get guys to maybe come back, you could see players like this star and dominate like Jordan Morris for a big club in MLS and still be in that national team conversation. But to Charlie's point, they're not ever going to be obvious starters over Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Gio Reyna.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I said a beautiful thing that this is, because you have this massive sort of ceiling that's already being realized by American players and Canadian players too, by the way, in Europe. And you have guys like Cole Bassett who are now here debating about being like, is he good enough? Is he going to break in? It's like, well, this guy could be an elite attacking player in MLS or for a mid-tier Bundesliga team or something else in Europe. He has all that potential, and he's just one of many that are coming through our academy. I think the thing that Cole Bassett has been elite at this year, and I do agree with you, Dave, about sort of his recognition of space and how to move and how to use passes and other players to sort of shape the situation that's coming one or two or three passes down the line and then make the right pass. It may not always be the pass that you go and see on Twitter that's in the compilation. Everybody's like, oh my God, Brendan Aaronson turned this guy and then hit the switch. But it's just like he used three or four passes in his movement to open up a lane to the mm-hmm. outside back for good early service. But then, by the way, he might be the guy that makes the run into the box. Yeah. His ability to understand timing coming out of midfield and space and probability as to where that cross is going to come, where he's best suited, and then finish. That is one of the places this year where I've been like, oh, okay. I understand now why people were so high on him. By the way, if we're talking about Colorado, I'm also super high on Sam Vines. He may not be a guy that is like national team starter, Europe, everything else, but he could be, and you made this reference in the rundown meeting, Dave, like a Justin Morrow type. Mm-hmm. Physically, I don't think he gets enough credit. He is physically elite, I think at a higher level as far as just athleticism than is Cole Bassett in their positions. And his service is very, very good. And defensively, he's not a guy who you're just like, yeah, he might get run a couple times a game. He's tough. He's dogged. He doesn't give up on plays. And he keeps himself in a good position. And he keeps his head moving. And he's aware. I like those two. Anybody else down this list that you would just bet on? Outside of, let's say, the top five, that you're like, this guy's going to have a great career, whether it's in MLS or overseas or wherever, national team. I would bet on him to be very, very good for a long time.
Well, before I even get into that, I would like to go back to the Barco conversation.
Okay.
And for Barco, you know he's a talented player. You know all these things that he can do. But I think it goes with all the player, the youth players in Major League Soccer. What system are you in? What coach do you have? And for Atlanta United, as soon as Tata Martino left that door, left the building, a lot of those players, especially a player like Barco, were going to suffer because of the style of play. There was no, it was almost like creativity, take that, throw that out the door, chuck that out the door. And so for a player like Barco who wants to get on the ball, wants to get involved, who needs to have all those touches, if you're kind of all of a sudden, we're only going to counterattack or we're only going to play down the wings, you're almost useless.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, Barco, when he's playing and he's fully fit and he's engaged, he's a top five on this list.
Okay.
But
so would you bet on him though? Would you say,
see, you I don't feel know. I don't know. I don't know, I don't know the moves that Atlanta United are going to make. Right. I can't trust that Atlanta United are going to get back to their winning ways because of the decisions that have followed.
And that was why it was so shocking with Frank DeBoer. It felt like they depreciated their own asset.
Yeah.
You know, they went out and they spent all this money and they were like, let's just knock a bunch of millions off this for the time being, at least, despite his reputation internationally, because we can't showcase him in the right way. Dave, who you got five and on that you're just saying, this guy's going to be it?
But I was one spot higher than the end list on Julian Araujo, who, from a personality, that
he's
guy's
12,
not
by the
lose.
Way, on this 2022 presented by Body Armor.
Nice. And I had him at 11, but he's not going to lose. And so he's a guy where I think fullback's a position where people don't want to spend. So at the worst, he's going to be an MLS starter at that position. But I think his ceiling is much higher. His ability to create service, you've seen it when he's played at wing, his ability to press high and create chances and then immediately understand how to get the ball in a dangerous place. And he's clean in possession and he's not going to lose 1v1 duels because of his aggression, his mindset, all those things. So I was pretty high on him. And then the other one is Christian Casares, which I put on my list. I think Christian Casares, and obviously I've seen him a lot more than other people covering Red Bulls too. And I know when he came out of Venezuela, it was basically a race to see who could get their name in first the moment he turned 18 in MLS. Mm-hmm. I heard there were 6 or 7 MLS clubs that 100% wanted him, and Red Bull just got there first. But I don't think Red Bull's the right fit for him. I think he's a guy who wants the game to be a little bit slower, to have the ball at his feet, to have a ton of possession, to Charlie's point about Barco, to feel involved, to get into that flow. He's so good on the ball. He's so creative. But his mindset is a little slow at times, and you've seen it this year. He can press. He can create chances because he has such a high soccer IQ. But in that final moment, he slows things down. And for the Red Bulls, then the opportunity is gone. And so he either needs to get better at that or he needs to get into the team that fits it better. It may not be in Major League Soccer, but you just look at Yangel Herrera coming to this league and obviously was better in MLS, but a young Venezuelan central midfielder who's now controlling things for one of the top teams in La Liga. And I think Casares probably below that, but has the ability to start for a team in a league like that.
Yeah, put Barco in New York City FC's squad.
Yeah.
And you for will sure. see
he's happy.
A quality player who's happy, who gets on the ball. The style of play would suit him. Although I think they really haven't even hit their fifth gear yet. They still have a ways to go. But that type of team, I think, set up would benefit Barco.
I'm going to go with James Sands. And I know that's kind of cheating because he's just outside the top five at number six. He was my number four. He is like, to me, he's like cheese pizza. He's like vanilla ice cream. He's the sort of guy that you're like, I like that, but it's not my favorite. But every single, his consistency in performances is very, very steady. And for the position that he plays, which I think is going to be center back, that's what I think. I don't know though. He could be a six. Who knows? I think at both positions, he does the things that you need him to do, and he does them at a high level and consistent. And he's not going to be the guy that, like, after a game, you're just like, oh my God, James Sands. But he's never going to be a guy that you look at and say, you blew it. You're the reason why we lost. And in those positions, that's really, really important. Consistency at a high level and the things that you have to do well, and then not making the big mistake. I think James Sands, if I had to bet long term, he's one that's a little boring.
Vanilla ice cream and cheese pizza. Those are my go-to.
I'm a regular slice guy coming from New York. If they don't do it well, then it's not worth being
perfect.
There.
You're a big James Sands guy.
Can I, though, say I think Charlie has some things to say about snubs? Charlie?
Snub it up.
You have some space now?
How can we not put Tajon Buchanan on this list?
Oh, Rev. What a coincidence.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Did you see the goal that he just lashed by Andre Blake? That Andre Blake, as good as he is, probably arguably
to be fair,
the best
Charlie, voting happened before that goal. I'm just throwing it out there. Did voting happen before that goal? And Tajon Buchanan's big question has been final product. And when you play the position that he does.
Well, we've seen the final product now, and we've seen the quality player he has. And we're talking about, look at this list, potential plus performance. Yeah, he should be on this list.
Okay.
And also Anthony Fontana.
You already did the spiel.
Come on, you already got your.
We got limited time on this show. You already did the spiel.
Also, can I just say for Charlie?
I'm good.
Charlie, and I agree with you on the potential for Tajon, but you talk about generations. A winger in Canada right now, it's not exactly the time you want to be coming through behind Davies, behind David. Boylett's still there, all those guys. So I'm just saying.
That's two players.
Yeah, okay.
How many guys start the game?
Here's a snub for me.
Richie Larea, you mean? Are you talking about my guy, Richie?
Left side, so right side.
Zachary Brobyard? Don't disrespect.
No, Tajon goes ahead of him.
All right. I had Francisco Ginella on my list fairly high.
I agree with that snub.
I had him at 11, and he did not make it. He was the first out after Moses Naiman. I think Ginella has shown more than he's getting credit for right now, and he hasn't been as consistent. But you're asking a guy that was dropped into a new country in the middle of COVID to be like what Marc-Anthony Kay has been after Marc-Anthony Kay had all the trust of Bob Bradley and a team was built, and he had Carlos Vela on that team. So I think Ginella is a guy that I would push up. That's my big snub, but I will have a column on MLSsoccer.com, MajorLeagueSoccer.com, coming on Friday with the biggest snub. So you can check that one out.
Can I just throw in a guy I voted for who didn't get in is Michael Baldissimo in Vancouver. He's changed a lot of that way that team plays his first year of pro soccer. I think we've talked about him on this show before.
We have.
Ability to hit that long ball to change the point of attack, to get them into the attack. But for such a young guy, I think that's been one of the most promising things that's happened this year. For Vancouver and Veselinovich. Did I say that right? Veselinovich?
I mean,
no one even wants to step in there.
I'm not stepping in permanently.
He's a guy who probably could have gotten on this list. He goes in that Louis Binks position who did get on the list, but doesn't get as much credit because they're not American or Canadian. If they were, they'd be a national team starter already, but they're not. So you pretend they don't exist
and put it back in your bag.
Yeah. We've done like an hour on this. We could do hours on this list.
Let's do these young players.
We could. We can't do it right now. We have to get to Drake Hills. He is the Nashville reporter for the Tennesseans. Some news with Nashville. They traded for Onwuala Bawana this week. They sent Jimmy Berdranda, who just never broke in, and 250K in GAM to Seattle. Mindo had a good thread on this. The basic thing here that you should remember, and look, Nashville's done this a couple times now. Just because a homegrown isn't going to be a starter with their team doesn't mean that they're not talented, doesn't mean they don't have value. We go back to Barco, we go back to timing, coach, and the moment. So good to see Onwuala Bawana get into a team that maybe he can contribute big time to. All right, it's time now for an AT&T 5G call to the field. We're talking to Drake Hills. He is the Nashville SC reporter for the Tennessean and the USA Today Network. He went to Northwestern. I almost said Eastern because Dave's here, but these medical grads, too many of them on this show between Paul and Sam and now Drake. It's like you guys are taking over the soccer game, and I'm not sure if I like it.
I'm giving you a fresh taste, you know, because you've been dealing with Sam and Paul for some years now. So consider this some fresh blood, and I bet you I'll change your mind by the end of this show.
Perfect. I like you guys. You're talented. You're fun, but there's just too many of you. It's like, you know, it's critical mass. I don't love it.
Also, Drake, our producer Anders went to Mizzou, so he wants you to know something about their journals. And
stuff. I told Weeby before the show started earlier this morning, actually, that you got to watch out for the Mizzou guys. You know, I mean, them and USC, those are the two underdogs I feel like people are not really depreciating enough and underappreciating us Medill soccer folks.
So exactly.
Shout out to Paul, shout out to Sam, shout out to Doug McIntyre, shout out to everybody in the Medill soccer.
Ooh, wow. We're getting all, everybody knows. Yeah.
Everyone
God, the
gets
list just
name.
Goes Drop. On and on.
Okay, Drizzy dropping them. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Let's go.
Nobody loves KU journalism, but we do a pretty good job, too. Now, that's the end of it for all the nerd talk here. Nashville, right now, in the playoffs. Proving some people wrong, including some people on this show that maybe thought that they weren't going to get it done. Mm-hmm. Tell me about where you're at with this team mentally right now, Drake.
I'm in a new era, mentally seeing Nashville, I would say probably with a new lens, because in August, I did have, like everyone else, had that doubt that whether it be Akam, obviously a veteran guy who was bagging in goals with Chicago back in the days. Obviously, he went to Columbus and in Philadelphia and had some other stops. But alongside even Dominic Badji or Abu Dunlady, who started pretty strong in his rookie year back with Minnesota and then obviously had a big slump since then. I didn't have that belief in Nashville, and I'm seeing them in a different lens. And I think that's credit to the DPs, right? The first DP in Hani Mukhtar, who I think settled in well over the past couple of weeks. Randall Leal, obviously not only bagging in some goals, but, you know, getting in some assists and setting up some other guys as well. You know, and then here comes Yonder Cadiz, right? So Nashville SC with this final cohesion of, you know, who they have up front. I think I'm seeing Nashville in a different lens, and I think the rest of MLS media and pretty all spectators and fans should probably see Nashville in a different lens as well.
Take us into the spectators, though, in Nashville, because obviously with this year in 2020, we haven't gotten a chance to get out there and get to know that fan base as well. What do the hardcore fans feel, and what is the rest of the city? How do they see this club?
The hardcore fans, I mean, let me tell you something about these Ric Flair chants. Ric Flair. I'm not talking about like one or two. You know, I get it, you know, 10% capacity. It's moved up to 12.5% capacity at home for Nashville SC matches. But, you know, they're echoing. And so that hardcore fandom, and that's finally like they're feeling the juice with kind of going along with what we just talked about. Like they're elevating with the players at the same time. So you're feeling that energy. I would say outside of that, I think Nashville really hasn't been able to latch on to. And maybe if this happened, obviously in normal times, maybe this period where the outside, you know, all the Titans fans and the Predators fans and really general sports fans in Middle Tennessee statewide, they probably would have latched on maybe earlier. But because of the separation and where we are and how we're living recently, it just seems like there's still a little bit of a disconnect, maybe some unfamiliarity that probably will take a little while. And I think with Nashville SC possibly getting to MLS Cup playoffs, that'll probably help a little bit.
Drake, when you look at the players that have come into Nashville, the expectations set on Walker Zimmerman,
right?
That's one player I think that has gone above the expectations, that has really delivered, has been more than advertised. But when you look at a Mukhtar and you look at Dax McCarty, some of these attacking players that you have,
right.
What needs to improve? Who's underperformed in your eyes? Who hasn't really delivered on their end?
I would say up front with Dominic Badji and David Akam. I mean, there's been injury involved, right? The lack of fitness with those two guys. I think when you take a look at how it started, you know, the rock of what Nashville SC was built upon, MLS veterans, right? It wasn't the big time, big names, you know, huge DPs, international guys coming in. It was guys like Dominic Badji, David Akam, who've come in as MLS veterans who have proven themselves in the league already. And they've been, as I said, they've been hurt with injuries and things of that matter, but they haven't been able to find the net. Albeit, obviously, David Akam was the guy who scored really the first goal for Nashville SC in the restart, get them their first win against Dallas back in August. But, you know, those guys, I think they need to kind of take that next step and get settled within this club. Because you did mention Walker Zimmerman, but I also think someone like Dave Romney has been spectacular. Eric Miller as well is someone who probably is in that David Akam, Dominic Badji area where you thought he was going to be that starting right back for Nashville. Seems like Alistair Johnson is doing well in his rookie year, right? Weight guy, you know, did well in his collegiate years, but it seems like, you know, he still has some growing pains. Right. I think we've seen that, you know, in the past couple of matches. His service into the boxes is something that still needs to develop a little bit, but he is someone who's obviously taken hold of that position. So I think those are the two sides of the coin.
Which is the real Hani Mukhtar? Which is the Mukhtar we're more likely to see long-term in your eyes? Because you see him against Houston, I'm like, Hani Mukhtar is messy. You know, he's like banging top corner free kicks and taking the entire team. But the rest of the year, I've been on this show saying, man, Hani Mukhtar was supposed to be the difference maker. And I see him pass backwards and get sort of like discouraged by double teams or pressure.
Style of play.
He hasn't been aggressive enough. Is that the team and the way they play, or is that Hani Mukhtar? Which one are we going to see? Which one do we need to see?
I think it's a balance, Weeby, because, you know, he's not a physical guy. He's just not. He doesn't fare well with that type of game and that type of style. Obviously, MLS and the playing style there I think he really has struggled trying to feel comfortable, right? And then even in Gary Smith's system, like he's asking a lot of those, that three line, right? And even Randall Leal can fit into that category with, you know, the defensive responsibilities, you know, sitting in that low defensive block. But I mean, like you said, I mean, that Houston game, I think you will see someone, especially from set pieces, someone who can set up other guys. You will see that, but I don't think he's going to be the guy, as you're saying. I don't think Honey is going to be the guy. I think it's going to be by a platoon. It's going to be by two or three, whether that be alongside Leal and maybe Cadiz, or maybe it's just Leal and Mukhtar as a double. But you're not going to see him be the guy. I don't think that's going to be his fit for Nashville. But I certainly think he's going to be similar to what he's been doing against Houston and even, you know, in the weeks before that. But certainly he's not going to be that quiet guy that we were all afraid of him being earlier this summer. Mm. So,
I was going to say, what do you expect?
Oh, share the ball, guys.
Nashville tomorrow against the New England Revolution.
That's not all what, Charlie not, cares about is the Revs. Sorry, I didn't want to step on you.
Not what you saw in early October, but I know Charlie had to get that one in.
Yeah, I had to because
he's trying to prep on this podcast right now. He's trying to get his prep in.
I made sure, right, that, you know, I came in with an open mind watching this Nashville side. I wasn't going to let, you know, what I've read, what I've seen, you know, what I've heard from people.
He's setting this up. Big day,
lay the land. Let me get your soundbite. So go ahead and get your criticism in now.
Give Charlie his open mic here.
Derek Jones is primarily a defensive player. Okay. At best, he's an eight. He was playing as a withdrawn forward. And I spoke to Derek Jones, and this is a player that I think has a high ceiling, a lot of potential. And you've seen it. Like, he can dribble out of trouble, and he's not relied on typically to be able to dribble out of pressure. He's not a really skilled attacking player, but he has some of those qualities that make him, I think, a valuable member on the field for Nashville, because he can hold up the ball. He can slow down the game. He can dictate the tempo and he can connect passes. But what I saw from Nashville was just, we're just going to play to a 0-0 draw, and that's happy that we're happy with that. I didn't see a number of options when it comes to attacking. How can we really break down a New England team? How can we make sure that we're having a team that's going to compete in that attacking third, and we're going to be dynamic? That's what I was a little bit surprised, because I thought Nashville were going to say, you know, we're going to counter, and when we do counter, we're going to press, we're going to look to create chances and opportunities, and we're going to, you know, cross, we're going to play through balls, we're going to try and be dynamic. Lacked in every way. And so for me, I was a little bit disappointed with the style of play. I don't know if that's something that they look to do for the whole year, or if that was just particularly for that one match. We just want to come here and get a point and go home.
You're accurate that, you know, they went up there, longest trip so far for them. I mean, you're not going to go to New England with Buchanan and Bambury, and even, you know, Bo was, I mean, obviously they didn't have Carlos, right? But still, getting hit on the counter would have happened if you allowed yourself to go and take chances with Derek Jones and with Alex Mouille and with whoever else you had up front. Matt LaGrassa was even in that side, right?
Right.
USL guy. He's like a Nashville SC USL original, and he's made his way up to MLS. But he is like a proper eight, like, for me. But he's not going to be another attacking threat going forward either. Same thing with Derek Jones, as you mentioned. So going up and taking a lot of chances and leaving a lot of vulnerability at the back to get hit on the counter, I mean, that would have been 2-0, 3-0 New England, in my opinion, if they took that route. So without Baji, without Akam, Yonder Cadiz hadn't even had like a full week of training yet. Mm-hmm. They literally had like an injury report that was longer than some people's, like, like a best 11. they had like 8 or 9 people. And if you count folks who were on the supplemental roster, probably even more than that. And then you also had the COVID case, COVID-19 case in going into that match. So I didn't expect anything more than that. But you're not going to see Nashville SC do that when they have guys that are back healthy. Obviously, Daniel Rios wasn't even involved in that match. But here he is, you know, 3 straight appearances, he's bagged in a goal. When you have someone like that, when you have, you know, guys getting back healthy, Cadiz is back in the side now. He scored in his second appearance. Nashville SC has the guys now. It's just a matter of them. It's just a matter of them walking it and not talking it.
So you, I think you made that point perfectly, and that's been a lot for this season. Is they're an expansion team in a pandemic year,
yeah, and they the tornado too, by the way.
Yeah, they probably have had the most setbacks, in my opinion.
Right. So they built the base here. They're good defensively. It looks like they're going to make the playoffs off that. Is this the base for more? Are they going to build off this into a higher level, or is this who Nashville expects to be in MLS?
No, I think it's the former, because take a look at even how they got Cadiz. Take a look at how they built with. I mean, I get the Madronda. No, obviously they put up a lot to get him, and then obviously sent a lot to Seattle to with Madronda to get Buana. But aside from that, they've been very frugal in their resources, and they've got expansion allocation money. So on top of that, where you can kind of use that to go domestically, but they have a side where you could probably still go sign another big time player. And for me, that's a winger. For me, that's someone to go opposite of Leal.
Right.
To be that top guy. I think that takes a next step up to prolific in terms of MLS attacking side in that context. And so you definitely have room to improve from there. So I don't think this is going to be something where you're going to have Nashville sit with where they are now. I think 2021 is going to be a little bit different for Nashville SC, where I think folks are going to see them spend maybe a little bit more. Not going to be big time, but I think just a little bit more.
Can I ask you, have you seen Rito Ziegler's soul around Nashville? Is it sort of like, is it wandering around at the stadium? Have you seen it down, listen to some live music? Like, because
I've seen tweets about like him being Boateng reincarnated, you know, when Messi did him wrong in the Champions League.
Oh, no.
I've seen like Tottenham Twitter go crazy on him, talking about like, why is he still playing? I mean, hey, like, That was bad. That was bad. And for Daniel, I don't think he's getting enough credit. I don't think he's getting enough credit league wide, Daniel Rios. I mean, I get it. He's not the first choice, you know, striker for Nashville SC at the moment, but like that was nasty.
Yeah, it was, but it was like, you know, like you're gonna blend up a smoothie, but the smoothie already blended itself. You know what I mean? Like Rito Ziegler laid down. Like the man, he slipped a little bit, but then he was just like, we're down 2-0 on 2 deflections. I'm just going to take a dirt nap.
My favorite was his reaction when he got up, and got good on Fox for getting this angle. But he was just,
what am I going to do?
He just stayed like that. But no, we got to somebody check in on him, because, you know, I get it. It was a third goal. If that was the first goal. So I get it. To your credit, Andrew. It was a third goal. They were probably like, listen, let's get
on a flight.
Yeah. It's a slow motion push-up. Like, let's be honest. He lowered himself down to the ground. All right. So what's next for Nashville before I let you go, Drake? What's a successful end of this season? Is it just making the playoffs for them? Will they point to that and say, look, boom, one of the, you know, expansion teams don't always do this, and many don't. We've had a great season no matter what happens in the playoffs, or do they need a little bit more because they haven't had fans, because they need a storyline in Nashville, because they need to set themselves up?
I mean, think about the home record. They're playing at Nissan Stadium in the play-in round. Just imagine that. Obviously, tonight will help continue that narrative, but they've not only been undefeated, but they've been decisively undefeated at home, right? Even the draws, I mean, I get it with Minnesota United. I mean, Minnesota did play to just a little bit better in the second half. But the entire first half against Minnesota United was all Nashville. And if you bag a goal, if you bag one or two goals, I mean, no one wants to go to Nashville in the playing round.
Nope.
For this playoffs. I don't think anybody in the East wants to do that. Especially with the teams like New England, who obviously they've shown they'll have two matches in their back pocket if that is the setup. Or maybe it is Atlanta. Maybe it is Chicago. Maybe it is Montreal who have to go to Nashville in the play-in round. But I don't think anybody wants to do that. So I think success probably for year one is getting that playoff win. Like, that's going to be big. And as we talked about before, that's not only just going to be big for the supporters, that's going to be big for echoing who you are and letting folks know throughout the rest of Nashville, throughout the rest of Middle Tennessee that, look, Like, we're not a joke. We're like, we're for real. And I think that's probably what Nashville SC will be come Thanksgiving time.
All right. Right now, it's a little bit, I'm going to say a little bit boring, but very effective right now for Nashville in their expansion season. Drake Hill is Nashville reporter for the
Tennessee. That's why we have to have Drake on. Drake makes it more exciting.
Yes.
Drake's doing his job.
No, I just got to balance it out. I got to balance it out because I know Andrew, he's gonna get his takes in. So,
yeah.
Give people an idea how to follow you, how to get your work on Twitter, et cetera, Drake.
Right. Halloween's coming up, so candy corn tweets are coming. All right.
Ugh.
Let me just let y'all know.
Let me just give you the take.
Pumpkins are candy corn.
It's not candy. It's torture.
You like the candy pumpkins or the candy corn?
The real original candy corn.
I'm in a house. There's a lot of debate about it recently. I don't
eat either. So if you want something nasty to make your teeth stick together, stick with that.
Listen, I'll give you the Snickers. I'll give you the Milky Ways and anything you want. But just know I'm putting respect on candy corn around here. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm with Weeby. Like if I saw candy corn being handed out, I'm skipping not, the house.
It's worse than I'll take an apple over candy corn.
I'll just wait for y'all to learn. I don't know if it's your childhood. I don't know what was going on back in the day, but clearly y'all were steered the wrong way. But listen, Live Life Drake on Twitter, okay? So anything Nashville SC, man, I'm always willing to talk some stuff. I especially enjoy when folks come out with like real debate. You don't see that much often. Maybe it's the way I tweet. I don't know, but show me some love. I'm always tweeting back, always following back. Live Life Drake on Twitter.
Hey, it's been a great debut here on Extra Time, man. We appreciate you. Even if you went to the school that shall not be named.
Medill Soccer FC.
Oh, God.
I'll come up with a better name than that, but we're going to start with that. Just to let you know, we're here to stay because I know Paul and Sam, hopefully they'll be proud.
Cut his audio, Anders. Nah, I'm just kidding. Thank you, Drake. Appreciate you, man.
All right. You guys take care, man.
Well, that was fun. Drake Hills. Live Life Drake. I mean, I'm going to put that up over my kitchen in cursive letters very, very soon. All right. What do you think? You had a little take as we sat back in a break here, Dave, and I think it might be interesting for people on Madronda.
I just think we didn't really talk with Drake much about the trade for Bwana for Madronda. Everyone's been talking about it. Like, obviously, we know what Nashville gets. And on the flip side, Seattle, they get Madronda and then they get some cash on the side. I actually, based off Madronda not playing except once this year, I think there's been injury problems for him over the last 2 years, including at SKC. This looks to me more like Nashville gave Seattle money to take this senior roster player off their books. And then Nashville opens up that spot. And for Seattle, it doesn't matter. They want the money. And to your point, Bwana's not going to play. Give him a better opportunity there because they're a win-now team and he's a young guy trying to find his feet. But I think Madronda can be good for Seattle if he's healthy. But I don't think there's expectations there. I don't think it was a player-for-player swap. I think Nashville basically, and Doyle, I think, has a good thread about it, wanted to open up the roster spot and save the money going into next year. And so they gave the allocation money, which a lot of it is expansion allocation, that will expire over to just take it off their books. We see it a lot in the NBA, right? You give a draft pick with a player's contract because you want to get rid of the player off your books, and the draft pick helps that other team.
Yeah. So looks like Seattle ate a little something, have a little bit of they have some allocation now to play with, and they also have a guy that could be a good left back, left wing sort of depth player for them going forward. Probably not left back. They got a million of those, but TBD. We'll see what happens. Big games this weekend. It's a good weekend in MLS. Some rivalry matches, certainly. Let's do our MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM right now. And I think we got to go with Sunday's match, El Trafico, LAFC, LA, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. That's on ABC in the U.S., TSN up in Canada. Chuck, who you taking? LAFC, LA. And I think the answer feels easy. Are you going to make it easy? Are you going to go out on a limb? Are you going to unmute yourself?
I'm going to unmute myself.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with LAFC. And for me, it's goes back to the LA Galaxy. I don't think they look like they're playing well. I don't think they're on the same page. They played a Vancouver team that is arguably the worst team in the league. And so, you know, you get a last minute winner from an unlikely source as well. Still, Chicharito struggling. Doesn't look like he's on the same page as everyone. You also question like, is he the guy you thought you were getting? How much does he have left in the tank? You've heard him talk about it in various interviews. You know, you give up the dream of playing in Europe because, you know, you really don't have that in you anymore. So if that's the case, you're coming to LA Galaxy, Why do you think they're signing you? Just to play? No, to win. We expect you to bring your A game, what you've done over the past 10 years in Europe, scoring goals. And he gets that ball on the ground, played in behind the back just for him, and he skies it over. It wasn't even close. So there are a number of concerns with this LA Galaxy, and it's always been their defenders, their defense, their goalkeeping. But now you're talking about your designated player who you brought in to score goals and wow people. Christian Pavon, the first minute he came in, you knew he was a legit player. You knew what he was going to bring. But you can't depend on him to do everything and do it all. And that's what it looks like to me. It's like, okay, Christian Pavon's coming in. He's got to save the team. He's got to do it all on his own. And that's what they have with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Zlatan is doing it in Serie A. So even at his age, it shows just how much quality he has and how important he was to this team. Yeah, it wasn't the best because that's how they played. They just said, let's lump it up to Zlatan and hope he can win us the game. And a lot of the times he did.
But it's a lot easier to lump it up there and let Zlatan do it than it is for Christian Pavon to take on an entire set defense and hope that Chicharito is going to make the right run and then have the finish, which none of that has happened so far. So are we going to go clean sweep for LAFC?
Because I feel that. It's not even close for me.
I look at LAFC and what we were talking about, BWP and his success this year. Tuttle Rahman, who does a great job putting out like really interesting stats, non-PK goals plus assists per 90. BWP is number one in Major League Soccer. Shout out to Cash Mueller for being number two. But what a resurgent season. What a gift to this league. What a gift to all of us. Like, I don't think we will ever appreciate BWP enough. And even without Rossi and Rodriguez again, because international duty, I don't think they'll be able to come back in this moment. I think they still have to be out quarantining. He is still such a good player and such an effective player that I don't even think this one's close. I think LAFC are going to mob him, and I think this is going to be El Trafico celebrations on ABC on Sunday.
Yeah, which also makes you question, what was Red Bulls doing, letting him go? Because look at what they've got now. Nada. They got nada.
I have a little disagreement in that I think for Brad and his age, where his body was at, having to play the Red Bull style or even just having the pressure style on him offensively for them wasn't the right fit. And even without the DPs, LAFC, it's so much more open. It's flowing. You see how much more of his actions are in and around the box rather than having to pick the ball up 50 yards away and try and progress it forward.
But I mean, that's the first thing I'm proud of with.
Yeah. I'm picking LAFC as well. And I think one of the things we haven't mentioned is Jesus Murillo making his debut against Portland. And I thought while Obobisi scored a great goal, there wasn't a ton of openings for Portland. And I think for LAFC, the question mark, same with the Galaxy, has been defensively. And if Murillo can step in, 26 years old, has played deep in Copa Libertadores, came from Independiente, same team as Atuesta. If he can step in and just be consistent alongside Segura as those international guys come back into the attack, that's the formula for LAFC to get back to a Western Conference championship potential. And I think it was a good step from him week one, and it should only get better.
Two good games to check out as well this weekend. Two on Saturday. You can watch them both because they're at staggered times. Miami-Orlando, no Gonzalo Higuain because he got real chatty, let's say, with the referees. Final whistle after that game against Montreal and got a red card. That's 3:30 p.m. Eastern. You can watch on Univision Tudiene. It's Twitter, free there, and DAZN in Canada. And then Philly-Toronto at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday is a great game. ESPN Plus in the U.S., TSN in Canada. Those are the two best teams in the East, maybe the two best teams in the entire league. That's one of those games that you have to watch it just to kind of do the measuring stick and see where they both stand. But a biggest story, I think, this weekend on the field is Colorado Rapids coming back. They play at Kansas City at 8:30 Eastern on Saturday. They've had seven straight games postponed because of COVID and everything that's going on with them. Five of those games have not been rescheduled, and it increasingly looks like points per game is going to be the metric, at least out in the Western Conference, to figure out the playoffs. And in points per game, the Rapids are fourth in the Western Conference. So they would make it on those things. It's been crazy. Like, Sam Stajkal, shout out. I hate to do it, Medel again, but I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I kind of want to
just...
I thought
it was Medel.
No, Medel. I'm going to call it Medel from now on. Just for my own reasons.
Doesn't matter.
Robin Frazier tested positive. He was okay. He came back. He was part of this outbreak, which I think you have to say that it was. They were doing video sessions on the field at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, like sitting 6 feet apart, doing it on the video board so they could have space. They were doing everything over Zoom. I mean, they haven't played in it's been a month now. It was September 23rd was the last game. but they're back. We don't know how they're going to make up all the games. It seems increasingly like it's impossible to do so because of the way their schedule works out. When you think about Colorado, what they've been through, what they might be, what this weekend represents for them, what comes to mind? I mean, this is an incredible hardship. This is very 2020, and we still don't know how it's going to end, but it seems like that 10-day break that was enforced is likely going to be the difference between them not being able to play and them getting on the field.
I think we talked about it going into the MLS's back tournament. These are a lot of young men who are going through something really difficult. Most of them live away from their families, can't see anyone. Then you get sick, and there's so much unknown around coronavirus. So it's going to be nice to see them do the thing they love and get together as a group where you physically, all of us want to physically be together. They can do that and compete. And we talked about it a little bit. It had really turned up for them after a tough stretch through the MLS's back tournament. Right before this happened, a 5-0 win was their last game that they played. And so it's exciting to see this group and a lot of what we talked about coming into the season, a young group that wants to attack the game. It seemed like they had started to find that again, and hopefully they'll pick up where they left off.
Good to see you back, Rapids. Good to see you back. All right. Andres says we have to wrap, but we didn't get
to the mail. Let's get one mailbag, which is our Continental Awards.
Let's get two.
And it fits very well with the conversation we had, which is Mark in Somerville says, how do you feel about the You Teach an Old Dog New Tricks Award? Goes to an older player over 30, I guess, who's made a comeback splash or went to a new team and wins a starting spot. He said BWP would be maybe the front runner to start that. What do you guys think?
I like that. Can you, Charlie, do us a favor and say Mark in Somerville in the way that it
Somerville?
Should be said?
Yeah, however
Mark
it should in be. Somerville?
Well, it's Mac. Mac in Somerville, kid.
Oh, I got my donkeys. I'm ready to vote.
Yeah, kid. So I think he's a heartbreaker. And you just got to go out there and get the Stata who's going to come in and really show the quality. And for me, another player that's on that list is Lee Wynn.
Ah. There you go.
Lee Wynn coming back to New England. So it's funny that this Somerville guy, he came in here with a good some good content.
And you said Lee's up in Cambridge, basically Somerville.
Yes.
They're neighbors. Mm-hmm. There you go. I think Dax gets a mention on this as well. Not really changing what he does, but coming in at an older age, new team, and being a leader in that way.
Yeah, we have a lot more mail, but look,
Anders, we have a ton of mail. It's great.
Anders
stuff.
Is yelling you, at everyone. Us. Maybe on Monday we should just like block out half an hour. We say that a lot, and then we don't get it
for
done.
Sure. And I think Anders' point is good, which is if Charlie chooses to sign with an MLS team and scores a playoff goal, he automatically gets this award. So Charlie, the ball's in your court.
My muscles wouldn't allow me to do that.
Brendan Hanson's doing the work for you, Charlie. Yeah,
dude, Charlie, get out there.
I heard Feely was pumped on Monday. Yeah. Anthony Fontana's going to do the running for you.
Anthony Fontana, he's about to send Charlie a hoodie because he got so much time in this show. He was like, bro, you're pumping right, me up.
Where would Quintero fit in this? In this list?
Yeah. Quintero, he would fit in this. Yeah. I think
that's
he would.
A good one.
That is a good one. By the way, we had great ones from Rafael on the last show. I have convinced the editors at MLSsoccer.com to let me take the ones that will not become official Continental Awards and turn them into a column where I'll put all this together. So look out for that on the site next
congratulations,
week.
Everyone. You've done Weeby's job for
it's a beautiful thing. That's exactly what I'm looking for on this show. That is what this show is. Basically, just doing my job for me. All right. Big thanks to Drake Hills. Big thanks to you guys. It's been a pleasure, as always, to talk about soccer and laugh and have a good time. Big thanks to Mark in Somerville. Was that any good or was that no?
It was all right.
Oh, fine. Okay. We'll end there.
He sounds like a guy from Medford. What an idiot.
Oh, God. All right. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be right back.